Packet Pushers.
Hello and welcome to the Network Automation Nerds podcast, where we explore the latest in network automation from a practitioner's perspective. I'm your host, Eric Cho, a network engineer who loves everything about network automation. Today, we're thrilled to bring you a collaborative episode with Scott Robond and the Total Network Operations podcast. Together, we're going to unpack the mysteries of network observability with authors David Flores, Christian Adele, and Josh Van Der Rey. You may have remembered them from an earlier episode, but in today's conversation, we'll pivot a bit and focus more on practical implementations and the operational side of network observability. Let's dive in.
Welcome to Total Network Operations on Packet Pushers. TNOPS is dedicated to hardworking network operators like you who deliver and observe all the right packets. Here on TNOPS, we want to shine a bright light on great ideas in NetOps so you can take away useful ideas and make informed decisions for your network and your team. As always, I'm your friendly neighborhood internet plumber, Scott Robond. We have a very special episode today focused on modern network observability. And as we get started, first, I want to welcome today's special co-host, Eric Chow of Network Automation Nerds fame. We'll be doing more of these co-hosted crossover pods. So g'day, Eric. For those that don't know you, can you give us a quick thumbnail snapshot of your background and what you do?
Yeah, thanks, Scott. It's great to be here. Again, my name is Eric Cho, and I'm the host of Network Automation Nerds. If you are ever wondering about network automation from a practitioner's perspective, then listen to my podcast, and we'll go from there. Thanks. It's good to be here.
Highly recommended. And today's guests have done a previous episode on Network Automation Nerds, and we'll get to their impact on network operations today. Let me, with great pleasure, welcome David Flores, Christian Adele, and Josh Vandera. They're authors of a brand new book on modern network observability titled, strangely enough, Modern Network Observability, a hands-on approach using open source tools such as Telegraph, Prometheus, and Grafana. Welcome to all of you. Can you just go around the horn and give a quick intro on your backgrounds?
Sure. Hi, my name is David Flores. I'm a senior network developer at CoreWeave, and I used to work with Josh and Christian back in Network to Code, and also Eric back in Network to Code. So that's actually how we all met. In terms of my background, I've been working on the network and the networking world for more than 10 years now. Automation observability, I would say, that over the past 6-7 years. So definitely has been part of the operations. I started as a network operation center engineer, and operations has been stuck into like part of my DNA now. So I would say definitely a lot of the work have been focused around operations. So yeah, that's me.
Excellent. Christian, how about you?
Similar, like David, I have been in networking for a while, from architecture to more development automation phases later in my career. Especially regarding observability, what made me do the click and really appreciate that observability was not only for checking dashboards, getting pages, was a few years ago when I was working for OpenDNS. We were running a very big network, and we came up with a really cool solution to implement self-healing networks, then just to put automation to serve the actual network business. And the pillar of this was trying to understand what was happening on the network from different perspectives, get the necessary data for you to take actions on top of that. And to me, that was the change point where I saw that, yeah, observability is not simply for a passive understanding of what your network is doing, but also something that can transform how a network can run.
Yeah, self-healing to me strictly implies closed loop control, right? And we'll get into that at some point, but I don't want to steal time from Josh. Josh, welcome. Tell us about yourself.
Thank you. Josh Van Der Rey. Been doing networking in some form or fashion for 20 plus years now, from large retail to a small airline, and got to even build out a soccer stadium once. That was quite interesting. But from the operations standpoint, definitely my roots of things, do network automation today for Network to Code. But getting back to the operation side, building the capabilities that are a part of this modern network observability is something I've had a desire since since probably 2015, 2014. And it's been something that has been a passion to be able to build out, but I haven't been able to do that until here in the 2020s, right? And so being able to help to describe the capability and get the modern tools available that can give you sub-minute details about the network is definitely something I've looked forward to and been pleasant to be able to write about with this. So
awesome. It's great to see the collaboration between all of you and, you know, even the contributors for multiple forwards, right? There's lots of hands that have gone into this and lots of ideas and input. Let me start out with my standard approach is what's the historical perspective on, it didn't used to be called network observability. It was monitoring and management. And if you recall going back to where this all started, we had something called SNMP, right? The Simple Network Management Protocol. And it was rudimentary, right? Simple is in the name, but it was a good start. And my rough estimation was, you know, yes, just over 30 years ago. And then I kind of went back into the RFC archives and saw RFC 1067 in August 1988. That's almost 40 years ago, right? So we've been working on this for a long time. You know, it was a good start, but was the workhorse for so long. But many NetOps shops and network equipment vendors have tried to turn off SNMP. You know, there used to be issues with older equipment, too many gets sets, you tip the box over. That's not so much of a problem today. Most modern hardware platforms can handle it. But again, the S in simple just leaves so many gaps from a time reporting perspective and so forth. If you fast forward to today, I mean, I'm just in awe of how far we've come with the ability to interrogate, report, observe, and the ecosystem that is emerging with so many different ways to get telemetry and information from the network and so many days to assimilate, report on it and turn it into actual information. And that's what I would love you guys to talk about today. So I want to ask Eric, as the author of the first foreword to the book, you know, you open up with this great line about going down a winding road at midnight without turning your headlights on. Can you riff on that and just set the modern stage for observability?
Yeah, of course. You know, I want to thank them for coming back. Apparently, I didn't, you know, mess up too bad the first time and didn't offend them. But yeah, they were gracious enough to ask me to, you know, kind of chime in a little bit on this topic of observability. And I kind of compare it to just driving down the road at, you know, I don't know, 60, 70 miles an hour, you know, and without headlights on. And so, you know, you could do it and you might even get an adrenaline rush from it, but you know, given enough time, it's not going to end well. And that's kind of what I see for observability monitoring, that, you know, you need to know where you're going and you need to have a clear thoughts or a clear vision of the process involved. So, yeah, that's what I think of it. And I'm, you know, curious as to what, you know, David, Josh, and Christian take on them.
Well, so yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, well, I'm just going to jump in on that aspect. And I also, you know, agree a lot with Eric's point, especially on the stage around observability. And one thing for sure, especially when we talk about, you know, expectations of monitoring observability, kind of like what their main differences are. And this might be a little bit controversial, especially writing a book around observability, but we can definitely say that observability is monitoring 2.0. Okay. It's definitely a way for us to shift our mindset of, I'm just looking at a specific state or specific metrics or counter on a specific device and just get insights of the data from multiple data sources, from multiple ways, to be able to capture the data. And as Christian said, be able to get not only insight, but also actionable data. Okay. So Observability is more of a concept for me. And you will see, especially around the internet, when you go into start searching for, hey, what is observability? What does observability mean in today's monitoring versus observability? And you will see a lot of articles around like, hey, they talk about like three main pillars. And if you have these three main pillars, you have observability, which is if you're getting metrics, if you're getting logs, and if you're getting traces, hey, you have observability. It's not really it, at least for in the networking industry. I mean, we have a lot of data, a lot of sources, like flows, for example, synthetic monitoring, when we perform ping trace routes, HTTP probes in order to get a service health. So there's definitely a plethora of data sources that definitely need to be correlated and simulated in a way for you to get insights and actionable data.
Josh, did you want to pile anything on top of that from, you know, expectations and requirements for monitoring to observability?
I think it's the continued keyword there in their requirements. It's the continued evolution of requirements. And, you know, tying this back a little bit back to Eric and driving down the road, we see definitely an evolution in automobile requirements, right? You've now got vehicles are coming out with all these other sensors that tell you how far in front the next car is or how far until you're about to hit something when you're parking your vehicle, right? And so there's new requirements that have come up. And that's kind of down this path, right? I still remember early in my career in the 2000s, I think it might have been at 15 or 10 minute resolution of S&P polling because, again, the tax came, even though it's not simple, down to where I was just before I got into network automation, hey, we were getting going for five minute polling. And at this point now, it's the expectation is to have much greater resolution of that. And so that continues to evolve and how much visibility. I definitely remember trying to find microbursts in my network of, hey, why are we dropping packets? So,
yeah, no, it's super important in financial services and trading networks, especially, right? But being able to get very, very granular telemetry over what's happening with the network. I know this isn't the super close focus of the book, but, you know, there's the ability to generate the volumes of data. David touched on a couple of different data types and just the whole concept of streaming telemetry, right? We can generate so much more information from the network, which should lead to higher quality decisions, right? Should, but it doesn't always, right? It can overwhelm us. In some of our discussion, you know, preparing for this, you talked about the need to correlate network performance with applications, especially in the cloud networking context. Could any of you unpack that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. And actually, this is a great point, right? You touched something really important, which is, okay, we can get a lot of data, but without insights, it's just a lot of noise, actually. So, and that happens a lot with also if you talk with heterogeneous networks or when you start getting into cloud networking. Observability in itself, it's the fact that you're not seeing an object, an entity as a one, but it's part of a holistic view, right? So this holistic view is gonna come from the cloud applications, maybe networks that you already have, the hybrid networks, maybe you have some VPC, some application services that you have some applications running on them. You may have talking about the computer, the storage that you have in your data center networks. You're talking about the networking, maybe branches, information. So all of these views, you kind of need to see holistically in order to get better insights, okay? So one of the few aspects and what is important in today's world of observability is how to be able to capture that data, to use it, to put it into a way that is actually, you know, normalized, tangible, that you can actually, you know, read it, create dashboards from it, you can create alerts from it, from multiple variety of data sources. Okay. So,
Yeah, David, what I like the most about your approach all three authors' approach in the book is this holistic view. And you mentioned it a couple of times already. It's actionable data, it's correlating between different sources and having a, you know, business impact on that. So I think if I were to kind of generalize it into kind of this DevOps mindset on, you know, holistically closed loop, as Scott mentioned, or different components, how they all fit together. Do you want to go into that a little bit on the DevOps mindset and how that correlates to your monitoring solution that you presented in the book?
Yeah, Yeah, for sure. So the architecture or this DevOps mindset comes from the framework of iteration, okay? It's a way for you to develop and operate. That mentality of developing and operate what you're currently working on, that's the whole mindset of DevOps. So from an observability standpoint, is what we do as network engineers is basically the same.
Christian, you also had some other things on the DevOps mindset that you wanted to call out here.
Yeah. If we translate the idea of DevOps into networking, in some big teams, you have been sometimes split the functions of the network delivery of new offices, new networks, new data centers versus the operations of these things. We strongly believe that with this DevOps mindset that came from the system of application delivery applied to the network, we can start using the same idea of where you deliver a network, you also bring all the operations together. So both things are connected, and touching back to the idea of this self-healing closed loop automation, you need not only to deliver automatically things to the network via automation, but also be able to check things and correct when something is wrong. This is one important change on the mindset of how networks are built and operated. But then also connected with this idea of DevOps, bringing some development to operations, all the book has been built on top of the foundation that we want to break traditional monoliths. It's a different topic, but we want to break this idea of you have a network solution that has to do all in one, collect, store, and visualize, alert. Because if you do this way, maybe it's very easy to get started, but you will find a point where you are limited, you are constrained by that system. You is not able to just, for example, you want to get a new visualization of that data. Maybe you will have to collect the data twice. And that is sense, and that doesn't have any sense. So we have to think on a way, and this book strongly encourages in that idea. We choose a few open source tools to get started, but all the proposal, all the architecture is built on the foundation that you can replace one tool by another, keeping the same functionalities and trying to accommodate to your needs. Shape it, tailor it to what you actually need that is not the same for everyone and for every network.
Yeah, that's what I love the most about the book. It's actually, you know, for me, if you don't get anything out of it, just one thing is compartmentalize all the functions in the architecture. Here's your data shipper. Here's your enhancements. And here's your, you know, normalization function. Here's your storage. And here's presentation. And you could take it all in one. And we'll get into like the buy versus build, right? But you could take it all in one, or you could break it down to different functions. And each function has its own, you know, projects or, you know, ecosystem of tools around it. And that's what I love the most about your approach. And that, you know, I'm DevOps mindset, compartmentalize and separation of concern, really.
Yeah. And the way that we chose to move forward on the book was keep this theoretical approach, explain the concept, and in order to land in and to show how it works, all these things have been explained with some tooling, with some examples, because the book is totally hands-on. There is a Git repository where you will find all the examples, all the configurations, a full lab that you can get, a network lab using Container Lab with a full set of settings in order to test these ideas. Just to make you understand that not only the theory is behind that, but you also can get something up and running.
So I want to park on this idea for a little bit. I think it's a really important thing to point out. And I want to give a hat tip to Damien Garros, who wrote the second foreword to the book, Damien with OpsMill. And I'll just read a quote from what he wrote. One of the key differences between monitoring and observability is the shift from a vertically integrated stack with limited flexibility to an extensible stack where users are encouraged to explore data, extract valuable insights, and improve infrastructure reliability. And I think built into that idea is the ability to compartmentalize and swap tools out where it makes sense. Now, that's awesome, and it's such a shift from, you know, what we had 15 years ago, let alone 30 years ago. But let me play the role of a grumpy customer with you. And I'm like, you DevOps guys, you just want to chase the the newest, brightest, shiniest object. And as soon as I've learned how to use a tool, you want to swap it out for another one. Now, I'm doing that intentionally, right? How would you coach gently, you know, somebody who's maybe got more gray in the beard that has trouble with, you know, moving to a newer, better tool within the tool stack?
But I definitely have an example that can go down the path on this. It comes about showing results. It's okay. Kind of what it really comes down to of going down the path of, hey, we've got this in place. We've had to set up around triggering when a internet circuit was about to be full and then rerouting traffic. That, okay, that happens frequently on the older tool set. Hey, okay, we'd have to have 15, 30 minute warnings a little bit lower to, okay, start watching it and you get into it. By being able to have that newer capability that is getting lower resolution or better resolution, but not really lower, better resolution, sure, to be able to see that, you can rely on the tooling better, right? And so there does have to be a tangible benefit to be able to make that shift, right? Of why are new tools being put in place? Well, because we're getting X, Y, and Z out of it. It's not just to replace it just for the sake of replacing it. There has to be that other value aspect of quality of life or financial otherwise, right? So,
and the mindset of being able to do that on a function by function or a function area by function area basis is really new territory for so many folks today. But again, I like the way that you've all called it out in the book. So any other thoughts on that? I don't want to cut out Christian or David on that topic, or Eric.
No, well, the only thing that I would say is that the compartmentalization actually is coming from the DevOps and the system engineering world, actually, because a lot of the tooling is specialized based on, hey, how do I get compute power or information around interfaces, memory, CPU? So the good thing is actually there's a huge open source and also community-driven development towards these tools in each one of these compartments, from right, from a collection layer up to the visualization layer. So I would say that one of the biggest aspects or benefits of going with this modular stack approach is exactly that. You definitely need to take that into account, that as a benefit, instead of going when you're comparing it to a vendor lock-in aspect of things as well. So
that's a great point, David. So it's nice and new and shiny for network engineers, but it's, you know, kind of old technology, stable for the other aspects, you know, maybe system engineering, developer, and other, you know, ecosystems. So when your manager comes in and go, well, you know, this is kind of new, and you're like, no, it's proven, it's got the track record, and we're just kind of implanting it into a different context for network engineering.
Yeah, exactly. It's basically just moving that into a different use case. And that's
it. Yeah, you know, an analogy I've liked in the past, you know, I remember talking with a friend of mine about book translation, you know, from one language into another, you know, into English, just because English is my native language. And, you know, we were talking about a new translation of a book that had come out. And I said, you know, do we really need a new translation of this book? And my friend's response was, well, if it's a good translation, yes. Right. So do we really need another tool for X or Y or Z in the stack? And the answer is, based on Josh's comment, if you can provably show that it gives you better information, then yes, we need it and there's room for it. So I'm saying that to myself as much as everybody else, because I also, you know, am resistant to change. I have momentum over the course of my career. And I'm like, I need to keep my brain open to new stuff that comes along. And again, tying it to results, tying to how is this going to really help me operate the network. I do want to pivot back to kind of the raw material, you know, the information that you can mine out of the network. And Christian, we tagged you on this one. Can you talk about the state of development for all of the tooling for gathering network telemetry and information beyond SNMP?
I would start that it's not only beyond SNMP. I think that SNMP should be still in your tool set.
Whoa, flag the tape. So SNMP is still good and useful? Did you really just say that?
You should not discard anything. What I mean is that we don't live in a perfect world.
Right.
And I guess that in your network, you will have devices that only speak SNMP. So you don't want to ignore all these network devices. What we really believe is that in the network space, I'm going to say we are lucky to have plenty of data sources, plenty of different data types that we can collect, everyone with different characteristics, with different value. And in the book, we have a sole chapter, that is chapter 3, dedicated to explain and to show how you can get this data and what kind of information you get about that data. As you can imagine, it's not super deep dive understanding, because you can have a full book for SNMP, and SNMP is just a small section on that chapter. But we are covering things like from SNMP, logs, network flows, streaming telemetry, different APIs like REST APIs, NetConf. Don't forget about CLI. People will hate me about talking about scraping CLI, but sometimes you have the data there. And if it's important for you, don't neglect that. But also, deep packet inspection, get lower level of packet information can be crucial depending on your use case. Don't forget about synthetic monitoring, trying to represent what your network will behave up to the application, because at the end, what the user experience is the application. So if you can understand the perspective of the user application on top of the network, you can get an insight that is worthy. And also take into account new developments that maybe sometimes are outside of the network space, like OpenTelemetry, trying to consolidate different types of metrics, traces, and logs into a consistent syntax from different places will help us into later stages of the model observability functionalities. When you collect things that are compatible, then it's going to be easier to compare and to just correlate. For sure, you can always do normalization and all that kind of fun stuff that the book also explains, because as I said, life is not perfect. But if things come with a common system format, everything will be much easier. And just as a side note, but in the chapter, we still mention with an example that as we are explaining and understanding networking, not only as traditional physical network, but also container-based, Linux-based networking, we also give you an understanding of, for example, how eBPF, that is a technology working inside Linux, can also provide some insights of that network. Does it mean that you have to collect eBPF traces in all your network? I don't think so. Maybe depending on the use case that you need to solve, you have available plenty of data sources, and then it's up to you to choose which ones you want to get. And when you get all the information, the next steps on the stack will be make usage of this data to translate into a real information that can help you.
So I like that very pragmatic, holistic approach to if I have the data from the network, use it. And if anybody gives you a hard time about CLI scraping, Christian, you let me know. I got your back. I'll support you in that, right? Let me extend this a little bit. And I think of two important adjacencies. Number one, what's your view on all the different data I can get from performance from cloud-based services and not just cloud networking? And number two, all the information logging that's generated in a security context. I know I just put a huge problem on the plate, but what do you think about integration with those other two areas of telemetry and performance information?
So maybe let's start with the security aspect. For example, there's a lot of specialized products on the security operation center space, SOC, right? It is heavily based on logging, okay? A lot of log data that you need to get into a way that is structured and then based on IP address information, destination, some information headers, whatever you may have in your logging. You process that, and create insights from that security service. One thing that is really important to know is that having the capability of an observability stack is that now you can also enrich the log perspective of your data center with that level of logging and be able to even correlate even further your applications. An example is a long time ago, built an SFTP dashboard. What is an SFTP dashboard? It was a purely SFTP server. Mm-hmm. And the server, the service, basically the SFTP service had a web interface, some databases, but passed over the network with firewalls, switches, border routers, connected over to the internet. So created just a dashboard, just looking at the relevant network devices that were on it, the relevant firewalls that were on it, the logging of those firewalls that we managed to capture, and also some health checks, some synthetic monitoring to verify this, the SFTP service was actually up or down, kind of became like the de facto dashboard for operations. If something happened, when you look at that dashboard, you see the whole thing. You see what is happening on the network. You will see if something is happening at the application level, or if you see something happening at the server level. So the ability of having access to the data and be able to pass it over the pipeline of your observability architecture to create the dashboards, the insight that you need, is crucial. Okay, and the same happened with the cloud services. Now there are limitations, of course. Especially on the targets that you're acquiring, like how you can get that data out with cloud services, is how can you get that data out of the cloud services or into cloud services as well. That sometimes is kind of a limitation, and you may have some different challenges that you need to overcome. But ideally, you know, just having that data, that pool of data into your observability stack is definitely really vital.
I like how you combined or correlate, pivot, however you want to name it, Scott, on that topic of security versus telemetry. Because I think, you know, even in the NIST security framework, right, the first step is to identify. You can't protect something you can't see. Right. And one of the problem with telemetry is, you know, back to what I said about driving in the night without daylights, is you can't possibly correlate and see so much information now we generated from different sources. And, you know, something that I'm personally really excited about was, you know, what David mentioned on the eBPF, the Berkeley packet filter, mm-hmm. that, you know, with all these, you know, advances, technologies, that you could actually go into DPUs really deeply and, you know, observe a lot. And, you know, I just want to point that out, that, you know, you can't protect something you can't see. And so telemetry, you know, easily, it's not just to know what your network is doing, it has greater implications for the rest of the organization as well.
No, excellent point. Let me use this to springboard to our next topic. So I've teed up this you know, to rip off the movie from a few years ago, Everything Everywhere All at Once. Right? There's all sorts of data that I can use, you know, but to prevent systems and myself from being overwhelmed, I need to think about trade-offs. So, David, what's your view of what are rational trade-offs that you need to make as you create and integrate a network observability solution set for your environment?
Yeah. So there are multiple trade-offs, of course. First, we need to start to talk about like the orchestration. Okay, by just having the focus of now, the observability stack is a composable architecture. When you have a data collection layer, you have a data distribution or processing layer, you have a persistence layer where your database lives, you have a visualization application, you may have an alerting application. Okay, now all of these components need to be created, configured. You need to specify to the collectors, hey, what are going to be the devices that I need to connect to? What I'm going to be using in order to, what kind of information or data do I need to get out of these devices? So they need to be orchestrated. They need to be configured, right? They need to be upgraded. They need to be built in a highly reliable way. So there's the aspect of the orchestration. Thankfully, okay, you know, piggybacking, I would say, from the DevOps and the SRE world, They already have a lot of this already, you know, pretty well cooked out with tooling like Ansible, HashiCorp, the HashiStack with Terraform and Nomad or Kubernetes, in a way that you can actually deploy your applications and you can deploy in a reliable manner, high available and so on. So there's definitely different ways there, but also that means that there's another level of skill set, okay, that you need to add into the table, okay? Oh, do I need to now learn around Kubernetes? Do I need to now learn how to do all of these things in order just to get? So there's definitely those aspects that you go and start looking into, okay, what are my real, what is my real problem, what I'm going to try to achieve? So right now I want to maybe build an MVP in order to test the tooling out, maybe in a Docker Compose format to test the tooling out to verify, you know, if I have enough insights of my data and I have enough alerts and build from that maybe an MVP, or can I start looking into using maybe a cloud solution, a SaaS solution that actually already has the high availability aspect of things, it already has the access, the enterprise grade, you know, security, role-based access and so on, already built in, and I'm just a customer of it, and I just send my data, maybe already normalized or translated. But that's those are the kind of trade-offs that you need to start looking into. And this goes as well into kind of like the build versus buy that, well, I know that Josh has something around that as well. So.
Yeah, good time to hit that. But you know, Josh, before we dive into that, you know, it sounds like there's room for something like an observability SME somewhere on your ops team, right? Whether that sits in a single person or is like a distributed, you know, I've got somebody who understands Kubernetes well, I've got somebody who, you know, really understands streaming telemetry and SNMP really well, but there needs to be that collective, okay, what to assess those trade-offs that you just called out. I need to like know the quality of what I'm dealing with, you know, the relative real-time intervals at which certain things can be collected. I need to know what to filter out, you know, how to get to the signal through the noise and so forth. So you have good, but read the book. There's more on this in the book for sure.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, go ahead, David.
No, well, what I'm going to say, you know, and in terms of some of the other trade-offs, and we can go into the build versus buy aspect more later, but on some of the trade-offs as well is that now that you're building, if you go into the place, okay, I'm going to be building now an observability system and I need maybe an SME for observability in order to start looking into this aspect of things, you need to start looking at, you know, what are your data retention as well, okay? What are your storage capabilities? So maybe it's a financial institution, you need to start looking at the policies of your data retention. It could be 1 year, 3 year policy for your metrics. And you need to start looking into, okay, how do I need to do data rollups? How can I aggregate my data in order to compress the storage and so on? So there are different techniques that a lot of this tooling already provides for you, so you can actually, you know, take advantage of. But that's definitely something that you need to also take the check mark on as well. So.
Got it. Yeah. Well, let's park on the build versus buy topic for a little bit then. And I can channel my grumpy guy again and just go back to, you know, Josh, I used to use Bay Networks site manager, and it just worked, right? Or maybe I was sophisticated enough later in the 90s into the early aughts to use Micromuse, right? And other tools. I just want to shrink wrap, Josh. I just want it to work. Where do you take customers and clients on that part of the journey?
It comes. I think I keep getting the parts about requirements, aspects of things. But within the book, we've provided an architecture framework that really starts to solidify different roles and responsibilities, right? So start to talk around what are the collectors, how are we going to get the information off, how are we going to data process that, and all these other bits and pieces. And so within that, very often in the complete suite of tools, and there are definitely those vendors out there that are going down that path, and there's nothing against it. This is just another, you know, what we put together is a tooling framework without that, but they play multiple roles. Right. And so very well could be the tool fits the organization pretty well altogether. And okay, yep, this is going to be good to go. But then if you want to start to enhance things or start to evolve things, we just don't want you to be handcuffed that you have to be, you have to fit in this, that the folks that are on the full path of closed loop automation, that when this happens, this other piece happens, right? And really start to evolve the capabilities of the entire platform of not platform. It's just, that's just part of it, right? And really the network, every application used to this day and age uses a network to interact. And so the network is critical for that. And so, okay, you want to start to get sub-minute resolution, you start to go into model-driven telemetry. One of the other big things that we talk about in the book is, again, contextual information from a source of truth. Be able to go out and say, okay, what is this interface role? Because I'm sure there have been people that have been paged out at 3 a.m, right in the middle of beauty sleep, that, hey, this interface went down. Oh, that was an access interface. The interface description at one point was a core, but because it's now just an access interface, it's no big deal, right? So by having that source of truth data that says this is the role of that interface, and you definitely want to be made aware of when a quarter of your core links go down, but you don't really, you know, if you have a handful of access interfaces, let's use that intelligence to go down that path. And those are some of the enhancements that you start to get by plugging and playing along the pipeline, where you might build some things and you might buy some things, right? And so it's not just going to be, you have to build this, but here's a pathway for you to build it all out. But we encourage you to, or all the listeners, to build that pipeline, build that architecture of what is relevant for your environment, and then make sure your tools are covering each of those positions.
Would it be a fair summary to say you want compartmentalization so I can swap new tools in, whether they're open source or whether it's a vendor product, but without creating silos? And that balance is, sorry, I'm going to say it, tricky. It's really hard to, you know, figure out what the line is there. And that it just takes thoughtfulness and system design.
Yeah.
Is that fair? Would you argue with that characterization, any of you?
No. I will maybe add a little bit on top of it would be that what I have seen, especially on the shops that already have, you know, some cloud or systems, you know, DevOps SREs already monitoring that aspect of things.
Sure.
You have individuals or platform teams that already have the backend pretty well fleshed out. They may have already some series of databases, access for visualization, and even the alerting already fleshed out. So the good side of things is if your shop already has that kind of tooling, you know, already, you can just leverage the collection of it. You basically take into account, like, okay, how do I collect it from my network devices? How do I normalize it in a way that can actually be shipped over to what the platform team already has and use it in order for to provide value, okay, to myself, to the network operations, engineering, to the data center technicians, okay? So there's different, what I like about the composable architecture is that you actually, that fine line of where things are living, it's easier to demark. Sometimes, for example, you might have, okay, I want to actually have the whole data stored locally for 7 days. So I may just deploy a small time series database. I don't need the whole high availability aspect of things and, you know, 1 year, 2 year rotation. I can actually leave that, send that over to a cloud service, or maybe the platform team already has that, and I just work based on the hot data, on the 7 days data, which is actually what most of us, I would say, really care about. If you want to provide maybe roadmaps, or you want to apply some machine learning capabilities to determine general trends and stuff like that, yeah, definitely you need to take a look at the long-term data. But that's another aspect of the flexibility of having this kind of architecture.
Yeah, I think that's a great point about flexibility, and that's what you know both Josh and Scott have mentioned, is that it's not so binary, right? Like, so in my, you know, you could actually buy something. Everything is SaaS based now, so you could buy something and then you build on top of it, or you could build something and then you bought, you know, different components to add onto it. So sure. To me, it's not a binary decision, but what is not, not negotiable is the flexibility. And that's what I look for in my solution.
Yep. Yep. Well, you know, Eric, with you having the mic now, you know, we got to give you an opportunity to follow up on any automation related questions that you didn't cover sufficiently in your Network Automation Nerds podcast with these gentlemen. So what are the connections between network observability and network automation?
Yeah, so I'm interested in what the authors have to say, but for me, you know, it goes back to what I originally talked about. You can't protect, you can't automate anything you can't see. So, you know, I'll turn the mic to Christian because he's been sitting pretty for a while. So I want to hear his opinion on that.
Yeah, actually, as I said at the beginning, my passion for observability comes more from what I can get from this architectural pillar in a network automation architecture in order to make all the delivery of new services on top of the network more efficient. I'm going back to this point because to me it's very relevant to start considering the network as a product. So something that we want to observe because we are delivering, and this product, from my perspective, and I guess that all of you will agree that when you are maybe using a software as a service, infrastructure as a service, something on the cloud, you really appreciate this self-service way to consume products. And this, to me, connects clearly with the observability part of it. So I cannot afford doing a self-service delivery via network automation, via automating tasks, without, for sure, a source of truth that defines what you want, but this have to be dynamic. You have to make it consumable by the users in order to change this intent. But after getting the intent and making this happen in the network, then you need observability platform that tells you that if the actual intention is reality or it was not reality. And if it was not reality, you have to look for correction actions. So I always look at this observability pillar as a complementary to the source of truth in a way that I define what I want and I can check what I have. And then with all this information, it's up to you, to your intelligence or artificial intelligence, in order to bring back to the beginning and try to correct this.
AI box checked.
No, we have not covered yet, but there is a full chapter on the book that we can talk about it later, that we try to make it some good examples to understand how you can leverage.
So I want to take you back to your self-healing comment, you know, earlier in the discussion. And to me, this is a key linkage between observability and automation in the network context. Well, here's what I want. I want protocol level automation eventually. You know, we talk about, you know, the evolution from static routes to floating static routes to RIP to IGRP and EIGRP to link state protocols like OSPF and ISIS, right? Going from horrible time gaps where there can be outages and packets dropped to finally having closed loop control mechanisms to, when an interface goes down, I flood that information and I reroute traffic automatically. You know, it used to be somebody hand jamming config in the CLI, and now OSPF and ISIS take care of that stuff for us automatically. And I've heard the argument that, the reason we don't see that today with network automation is because the use cases are harder to fully identify. And I think if you were to go back to John Moy and his work in, you know, defining what OSPF does, I bet it was hard for him too, and all the other contributors to OSPF, right? But we got it figured out. What's it going to take to get to that more automatic end-to-end automation in the network? Self-healing, I think, captures it really well, Christian. You know, where I see that as a rational and useful end goal, but there's It's slow. We're slow getting there. I think you're on mute, Christian.
Yeah. I can bring some more explanation to my point, because when we talk about self-healing, it looks like a promise. And maybe the challenge is that if you try to make it generic, you're not going to find a self-healing solution for everyone.
Sure. For sure. You can just... We're in the marketing space, right? With self-healing alone.
For example, if I was talking about SD-WAN, you as a vendor, you can bring your own self-healing solution because you know all the parameters. But for example, I can talk about my experience in the past where I can, if I want to actually understand what's the operational state of my transits in many point of presence around the world, I can leverage the network that they have via some, let's say, abstractions and build, for example, you can build GRE tunnels in order to encapsulate traffic and make sure that you control which provider you are using to reach other providers. And then this connects with the idea of synthetic monitoring. So if you think that getting all this information, like a matrix of ICMP traffic that gives you packet loss and latency, if you can take conclusions from that data, you can then automate your network. For example, if I can conclude that observing from the perspective of my 50 POPs around the world, that via one provider in one location, there are some problems in more than 50% of these perspectives, this to me, it's a hint that something is not going well. So if the POP has many transits, I can put my automation in self-healing mode and, let's say, drag BGP traffic out from that place in a way that the traffic will, without any problem, will go away from that place. You keep monitoring that interface, that circuit, just because it's still active, but not with traffic. So when the time comes back and everything goes well, you observe that state and your automation can kick in and recover that. This is a very specific use case, and it's just using some specific monitoring data. My conclusion and my recommendation is that don't try to look for a magic one that says, I'm going to solve all my network. Just look for what is a real problem that you have to face and that is very important for your business. And with this, just conclude which data you need to solve the problem and make it automated.
No, that's solve one problem at a time, right? Find concrete things that you need to actually address. I'm with you on that for sure.
Yeah.
But we do. Yeah, David, comment.
Just wanted to add as well is that commenting on top of what Christian said on each use case, I think that's the most important part. And one of the things that we talk about in one of the chapters of the book is how do you actually tackle that if there's no magic wand, right? Because the networks are heterogeneous, you may have different applications with different traffic patterns, you may have different services, and how can you address that? Okay, so one thing that we have been leveraging a lot, especially when talking about network automation and configuring and provisioning network automation, is a workflow orchestrator. So normally the workflow orchestrator jump into place to help us configure the network based on our intent. Okay, now how can we use a workflow orchestrator based on event-driven data? Okay, how can I, based on some alerting or some events that is happening on my network, use a workflow orchestrator? Because the workflow orchestrator is going to give you the capability of building the use case tailored to your needs. Okay, what you just need to start working on is creating the necessary, steps and jobs and flows in order to address it the way that your environment needs to be addressed. Maybe for some reasons, one of the examples that we have in the book is actually, hey, I have an interface that is flapping, okay, and it's on a certain circuit. That's basically going to generate logs. Those logs are going to generate alerts based on the interface flapping. If the interface flaps, then you know what? Go to the source of truth. We use NARBOT as a source of truth in the labs. Just put it into an alert state. And that's an example. But you can actually, grow from there. Maybe you want to shift traffic, BGP traffic, so you can maybe apply a BGP policy on the devices based on that. And maybe you want to put that circuit into maintenance mode so the data center technicians can actually jump into place and they get a notification, hey, this circuit needs to be looked at, change optics. So definitely the beauty of the workflow orchestrator is that you can actually build the workflows tailored to your environment, to your needs.
Well, look, for sake of time, I think we need to wind this down. I know there's so much that we didn't cover that we could have covered here. But isn't that the point when you're doing a podcast episode about a book? We're here to tease a little bit. But as we wind this down, let's go around the horn. And I want to ask each of you, is there one thing that hasn't been said here that is really impactful for people in network operations roles that your book or what you've done around the book can be really helpful for? And I'll just use the order on my screen here. David, what's one thing you want to emphasize with NetOps folks as a part of this observability conversation?
So from NetOps folks, I would say that there's definitely better ways to address operations at the moment. We just need to embrace the technologies that are rising with this AI, for example, as well, and to leverage it in a way that actually is going to make our lives easier, especially operationally. You don't want to be waking up at 2 a.m. for issues that are not really that relevant. You want something a little bit more intelligent that can help you out. So the aspect of data being available, getting automation on top of it, and leveraging techniques such as AI definitely helps. So it's basically have an open mind on all these different approaches and how this actually is being used towards your day-to-day operations.
Josh, I'll put it to you.
I think David got a lot of could be hit on everything there. But in addition, beyond the open mind and take a look, I think one of the things that is key for me is the architecture of and just building the pipeline and knowing that there are capabilities out there. So going with that open mind and taking some more knowledge of what's capable and keep exploring.
Let me pull on that just a little bit. Is there a really good single place or a set of places where I can stay really well informed on advances in the observability stack? I know maybe that's a magic wand type question, but do you have a good source? It doesn't have to be the only.
I think we're starting to see things evolve. I believe we're going to have some things going on there as well. I think there's also a couple observability conferences out there where that's really the bleeding edge, or no, I say the cutting edge of things, with bleeding edge coming right behind that. right. But so out there, there's various the chat mechanisms out there. I know that there's some few Discords out there, also some Slacks. There are some channels in the network automation forum, the network to code Slack as well, around being able to talk about automation, observability, all the pieces together. So
great. No, those are all good ideas. And network to code Slack is open to all. Anybody can join.
It is. You'd go to networktocode.slack.com, I think, or slack.networktocode.com. One of the two. There's a Heroku sign up page that you enter your email. It's just there to register to Slack and lets you right in. So
awesome.
All free and open.
Cool. Thank you for that. Christian, how about you? What's one thing you want to let NetOps folks take away from this?
Just to cover what Josh said before, I think that you can summarize that whatever is related to observability, it should apply to network observability. So we have been disconnected for a long time, and it doesn't make any sense. For sure, we have some particularities, especially on the data gathering, on the collection of data. But aside of that, all the rest, you can just reuse what has already been invented. And to me, this is an important lesson to be learned by network engineers. Then, if I want to highlight something that we have not mentioned in the book, that to me is also very important, is that we used to think, and I'm putting myself in front of all of you, is that we usually try to solve things in a very technical way, and we only have our perspective, the point of view of the network engineer, network architect, and operator.
Sure.
And we have to understand that what we are producing here is data that will be analytics for different perspectives. Can be supporting a network troubleshooting function, but can also be used by a manager doing capacity planning or a business director understanding how much revenue our services, BPM services, are delivering. So starting to solve an observability problem from the person, from the point of view of who is going to consume that data, that this can have many answers. Can be, as I said, from the business perspective or from a more technical operator perspective. Maybe these two different points of view will just rely on the same data, but this data have to be enriched, prepared, and visualized and reported in a completely different way to be useful. So understanding from this, then you see the technology simply like your support. So the technologies, the products, the solutions are your supporters that have to follow a plan. And this is where the architecture that Josh mentioned kicks in. So all these tools can get you into a mess of what I use this tool for, because most of the times, all these tools can have more than one functionality. So maybe one tool can do a storage and visualization. The other can be collection and storage, or just one thing or the other. So understanding what you are actually trying to get from a tool gives you the full capacity and freedom to say, okay, I understand why I'm using that tool, which are the functionalities that I am appreciating from that tool, and take the decisions, make yourself owner of your destiny.
Excellent. Eric, you're not getting away without answering the question too. You get the last word on this.
What's the question? The one thing that I want people to, or some proud of?
What nuggets on observability do you think need to be emphasized for and be helpful for people in NetOps roles?
Well, I think they all took the good ones. So, but I just want to echo, what people have said was just being open-minded. I think, if there's one consistent theme that in my career that served me really well, regardless of the place I've been to, the technology I've touched, was just to keep open-minded and keep learning, whether that's from, YouTube video nowadays, previously was books. And so I just want to, echo what David had mentioned before, was just keep open-minded, keep learning. And, with a focus on business outcome, right? Like, it's not just, learning for the sake of learning, but with a goal in mind, with deliberate practice, fail forward, that sort of stuff. So yeah, thanks for letting me, have the mic for that one. Sorry, I didn't bring anything original, but I just want to emphasize the previous two great points that they made.
Learning involves repetition. And even though we may have heard that before, Eric, from you and other places, it's still a good reminder. Well, look, I appreciate all of you being here today. Where's the best place for folks to find you? Is LinkedIn preferred, or do you have another place that you like folks to find each of you? Josh, how about you?
Yeah, so I'm on LinkedIn. Josh Vandrey, very unique last name altogether. You should find me. Otherwise, I do maintain a site blog at josh-v.com and have the various social medias that I remain active on out there. So various topics out there, and appreciate it.
Excellent. David, how about you?
Yeah, mainly on LinkedIn too. I also have a blog post. I have this alias NetPanda. In different places, you might reach me on as NetPanda in Slack or the blog post as well. But
excellent. Christian?
And David is not even Chinese. He has the panda as the handle. But anyway, Sorry. Go ahead, Christian.
Yeah, I'm not super active on social media, but you can find me in LinkedIn too. But I'm trying to be as present as possible in many community events, especially in Europe, because I'm based in Barcelona. And if you come to Barcelona, we are running a local community event called NetBCN, where we are planning for great events on the next months. So yeah, just ping me if you are coming, and you will be more than welcome.
I need to find a way to get to NetBCN. I've seen you advertising it for so long. But last but not least, Eric, where do we find you?
Yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn. That's where I mostly hang out. It shouldn't be too hard to find, but if you do, just type in more words, network automation, something like that. And check out Network Automation Podcast if you would. And just pick an episode that you feel like that you can most relate it to. And we would love to have you there. So thanks, sir. And again, Scott, thanks for having me. I love being the dumbest person in the room, and certainly the case today. So thank you.
I think we're in competition, and I win. I win that one. But thank you all. This was great. We scratched the surface here on modern network observability. The book will be out as of October 2024. David, Christian, and Josh, I think they've demonstrated their expertise in observability and automation and the practical things that they bring to the conversation and what you can do. When I saw the opportunity to have them on today, this just felt like it was right in line with the TNOPS philosophy of making informed decisions for your network and your team. So be sure to check out Modern Network Observability and grow your knowledge and perspective on observability.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Network Automation Nerds. I hope you enjoyed this collaborative episode with Total Network Operations. I know I did. Do you have any feedbacks for Network Automation, our guest today, or this crossover episode? Send us some follow-ups at packetpushers.net/FU, where the FU stands for follow-up, and we do really want to hear from you. Check out our website at packetpushers.net to find other network engineering-focused podcasts, blogs, YouTube videos, and so much more. I also want to thank you, the wonderful listeners, for your support. Last but not least, remember that too much network automation will never be enough.